ki jai, Navadvip Maya Purnama ki jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma ki jai, Gangamai Jamuna Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Maharani ki jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki jai, Gaura Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivasesis and Nivadi Paskatyadi Satani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Samsajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva. Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lavita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha. Panchakalpati Vishchaki Vasindhya Vitap Titanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So September 21st, this is the fall equinox, and my daughter's birthday. The first baby born in the 55th Street Temple, actually in the temple. She was born in the temple building. And all the ladies were outside my door having a big kirtan during the birth. She was born right when everybody was chanting Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Yeah. Yeah, and she was born right then during the Panchatattva Maha Mantra. And she didn't cry when she was born. I thought she was dead. She didn't cry, you know. And, but she actually smiled right after, right as she was born. She smiled. Midwife said, she's smiling. And then the next morning, we took her to Mangalartik. She went down the elevator. We took her to Mangalartik. And she was 12 hours long. All right, so we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. This is in 2020. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 20, which is a description of autumn and the rainy season. Text 24. Vamunshanjvayubirnuna Bhutvyaschamritam Bhutebhyaschamritam Ganam Yatashishovishpataya Kale Kale Dvijerita. Please chant. Bamunchan. They released. Vayubhi. By the winds. Nunaha. Impelled. Bhutebhya. To all living beings. Cha, and Amritam, their nectarian water, Ganaha, the clouds, Yata, as Asishaha, charitable benedictions, Vitpatayaha, kings, Kale Kale, from time to time, Dvija, by the Brahmanas, Yuritaha, encouraged. BBT translation. The clouds, impelled by the winds, release their nectarian water for the benefit of all living beings, just as kings, instructed by their Brahmana priests, dispense charity to the citizens. Purport. Srila Prabhupada comments, in the rainy season, the clouds, tossed by the wind, deliver water, which is welcomed like nectar. When the Vedic followers, the Brahmanas, inspire rich men like kings and the wealthy mercantile community to give charity in the performance of great sacrifices, the distribution of such wealth is also nectarian. The four sections of human society, namely the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, and the Shudras, are meant to live peacefully in a cooperative mood. This is possible when they are guided by expert brahmanas who perform sacrifices and distribute wealth equally. I'm going to look now at Light of the Bhagavata, text 21. Srila Prabhupada's translation. The wind carries the clouds to different parts of the globe, and the clouds distribute rains to the satisfaction of the people in general, just as rich kings and merchants distribute their accumulated wealth inspired by religious priests. Commentary by Srila Prabhupada. As already explained, the four divisions of society, namely the intelligent class of men, the brahmanas, the ruling class, the kshatriyas, the mercantile class, the vaishyas, and the laboring class, the shudras, are meant to achieve one goal in life, self-realization, or cultivation of the human spirit. The intelligent class of men, the brahmanas, are to inspire the kshatriyas and vaishyas in performing sacrifices for spiritual cultivation, and thus the cooperation of the brahmanas, kshatriyas, and vaishyas uplifts the people in general, or the ordinary laboring class of men. As soon as this cooperation between the four classes of men in society stops, and the basic principles of spiritual culture are neglected, the social structure of humanity becomes the second edition of animal life, based on the propensities of eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. It is the duty of the intelligent men to influence the members of the richer communities, the kshatriyas and vaishyas, to sacrifice for spiritual culture. Only in this way can the tension between the capitalists and the laborers be well mitigated. In this age of Kali, when a slight, this is really appropriate. In this age of Kali, when a slight difference of opinion leads to quarrel, even to the extent of riots. Pretty appropriate. It is the duty of the intelligent men, the brahmanas, to selflessly inspire the richer people to sacrifice for this purpose. It is suggested herewith that the men of the intelligent class should not themselves try to become kshatriyas or vaishyas. I'll read this again. It is suggested herewith that the men of the intelligent class should not themselves try to become kshatriyas or vaishyas. Nor should they engage themselves in the occupation of the various other classes. Rather, the brahmana should simply guide them in spiritual cultivation, just as the wind carries the clouds to other places to pour water. The wind itself does not take up the responsibility for pouring water. The most intelligent men in society are the saints and sages who have sacrificed everything for the service of spiritual culture. Their duty is to travel throughout human society over the airways now, and inspire its members to engage themselves in acts of spiritual culture by sacrificing their words, money, intelligence, and life. That should be the theme of human life in order to make it a complete success. A society with no taste for spiritual culture is a blazing fire, and everyone in that fire perpetually suffers the threefold miseries. As clouds pour water on a blazing fire in the forest and thus extinguish it, the intelligent men who work as the spiritual masters of society pour water on a blazing fire of miseries by disseminating spiritual knowledge and inspiring the richer section of the society to help in the cause. Temples of worship, for example, are constructed by the rich, and these temples are meant to impart spiritual education to people in general. Thanks to Lila Shakti inspiring us to become an education center. The periodic spiritual ceremonies are held for inspiration and not for exploitation. If there are flaws now because of the age of Kali, they should be rectified, but the institutions must be saved. So here Srila Prabhupada is talking about cooperation. Between the different segments of society. And some of you may know that I'm working with a devotee named Rukmini, aka Dr. Ruchira Dutta, on a book on career dharma. One of the chapters is on the cooperation between the different classes of society. So in our modern society, we often have conflict between these different classes, isn't it? A lot of the quarrel, a lot of the riots are a result, literal riots, are the result of this conflict between different classes of society. When you study sociology, there's different lenses through which you can view society. One of them is called functionalism. Functionalism is you view the different parts of society like different organs in the body that all work together for the good of the whole body. And another lens is called sometimes conflict theory or critical theory. And this is where you see the different parts of society as vying for supremacy. And generally, the lens is either class or gender. So in conflict theory or critical theory, either you see societies of perpetual war between men and women, or you see societies of perpetual war between the different classes and groups of society, however you demarcate it. So the Vedic view is a functionalistic view. The Vedic view is that the parts of society are supposed to work in cooperation with one another. And in order to do that, one has to know to which part of society one belongs and what one's role is. You have to know, are you, you know, a brain cell or a heart muscle, or are you a stomach muscle? Are you, you know, what are you? You know, you don't want the stomach trying to do the work of the brain. You don't want the heart trying to do the work of the legs. You don't want the brain trying to do the work of the hands. You know, the different parts of the body. We start out in the womb of our mother just as an undifferentiated cell, and eventually that separates into these different organs of the body. So here the Srimad Bhagavatam is giving an analogy. There's so many beautiful metaphors and analogies in the Bhagavatam. And this is one where the Brahmanas are compared to the... In the verse.
Yeah.
In the verse, not in the purport.
Wind?
Nope. It's an analogy. This whole chapter is an analogy of nature.
Clouds.
Without looking.
Clouds.
No! The Brahmanas are told not to be the clouds. Who are the Brahmanas? The breeze. Yes, the wind. And who are the clouds?
Satriyas,
yes. And Prabhupada, in his translation, says it's Satriyas and the Vaishyas. Yes. And remember, we were talking about earlier in this section about the rain makes everything what?
Lustrous,
right? Nourished. So who's getting nourished by the rain being blown by the wind? The common people, which are compared to what? It would be the earth that's now producing, right, seeds and fruits and flowers that nourishes everyone. So the earth is being nourished by the rains, which are being blown about by the wind. So the wind is compared to the Brahmanas, and the clouds to the
Kshatriyas
and Vaishyas, and the earth to the
Shudras.
Yes, all right. And of course, where are the clouds getting the water? They're getting the water from the earth. Kshatriyas are getting their wealth from the people. The Vaishyas are getting their wealth from the people. And then they're redistributing it for their benefit according to the directions of the Brahmanas. So this is a whole mood of... And you don't, no one tries to do the work of someone else. The earth doesn't try to do the work of the clouds. The cloud doesn't try to do the work of the earth. The earth doesn't try to do the work of the wind. The wind doesn't try to do the work of the clouds. They each have their own spheres in which they work together. And here, this is about charity specifically. And giving in charity, which Srila Prabhupada comments that should be distributed equally. You know, it's a little bit of a socialistic view there, that charity should be given widely and equally. Jiva Goswami in his commentary, Sanatan Goswami and Jiva Goswami have very short commentaries, but Jiva Goswami says this verse also talks about giving charity at suitable times. And that immediately reminded me of charity according to the modes of nature. that Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita. So if you give charity in the mode of goodness, let's say in the mode of goodness. So what's the motivation for giving charity in the mode of goodness?
Proper place at the proper time.
You do it at the proper place, proper time, to the proper
person.
And what's your mood?
No expectation.
When you're not expecting anything in return, what are you doing it for?
To help others.
Om Tat Sat. That would almost be bhakti, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe in the mode of goodness you're going, you might be going for the Brahma. And you're giving it so you can feel good inside. People in sattva guna, they're giving charity. It's described out of duty, but that's a very different duty than what happens in rajaguna. And I think many times we equate the word duty with obligation, and obligation puts you into rajaguna. So when you're giving charity, just because it's the right thing to do, that's what it means by duty. And you want to be in harmony with what's right. You want to be in sync. So the Om Tat Sat, for those in sattva guna, is I want to be in sync with reality. Because when I'm in sync with reality, I feel happy. All right, what about in rajaguna?
You want something back.
You want something back. It's calculated. You're thinking, well, if I give here, I'll get something back here. Now, we do get something back from charity, yeah? That's a fact. Prabhupada said, if you give charity, you get it back in your next life, sometimes in this life. And the more worthy the person is that you give charity to, the more you get back. I had a very funny experience in New Zealand. New Zealand was a place that never paid for airfare. I don't know if they do now, but anyway, they never paid preacher's airfare. And Jai Pitaka Swami, this is before his stroke, he was there with a couple of assistants, and when he was sitting on the Vyasasana, he said, you know, the temple doesn't pay airfare if anybody would like to help out. And I thought, I know what that's like. So I didn't have very much money at that time, but I gave him $50 towards airfare. And the next day, a devotee gave me a donation of $500. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. And so a good investment policy, although I didn't give it with that in mind. But yes, the mode of passion, you're giving with that in mind. You're thinking, you know, well, if I give charity, I'll get something back. Yes, and we sometimes run into this problem in managing the Hare Krishna movement. Right? Sometimes people give a lot of donations so they can manipulate things.
Yeah.
Right? And run into this kind of problem. Which is why Raghunath Das Goswami stopped getting money from his father. Because I never understood that for years, you know. Why did Raghunath Das Goswami stop taking his father's money? And then I saw that sometimes people, they want to use that, you know. So that's the mode of passion. Another thing in the mode of passion is charity given grudgingly or with regret later. By the way, charity isn't just money. Charity is also time, energy, expertise. Right? Most people, the way they have money is by working for it. It represents their time. And when you give time, you're also giving in charity. Or you're giving your knowledge. That's also giving in charity. And when people say, you know, I gave my youth to the Hare Krishna movement, and so I didn't get an education, I didn't do that, I should have... That's charity in the mode of passion. Everybody follow? You regret later. Or charity given under a threat of obligation from a superior. It's also charity in the mode of passion. And I've seen sometimes in ISKCON that we use this rajaguna feelings to get money from people. That will say, you know, you should give some charity because you'll get this or that. Or, you know, people feel, well, my guru told me to give, so I should give. And people don't get the full result of charity if it's given in the mode of passion. It's not... It doesn't uplift them as much, even if it's being used for Krishna. I did an in-depth study of charity, I guess now about 12 years ago. And I was really moved by some research into Christian organizations that wanted people's experience of giving charity to be as uplifting as what the charity was being used for. Right? I just recently had an experience of someone asking me to give charity in the mode of passion. So I was invited to give a series of 6 lectures, an hour and a half each, and the devotees who invited me to give these lectures said, we are going to be charging the participants to come to your lectures, but we would like you to give whatever money we would have given you back to the temple. And, you know, I thought, well, now if I say no, I'd like to have the donation you would have given me, then I'm going to feel, you know, disgusting. I'm going to feel like, well, I don't really support the temple, and I don't really care about the movement, and, you know, and if I do say, well, I don't, all right, fine, you can keep it, then it's going to be charity under obligation. It's going to be charity being pushed by someone else, and that'll be charity in the mode of passion. You know, so I finally just said, I wrote them a whole long letter, which I ended up posting on Facebook, and I said, just take whatever you would have given me and donate it to the Radha Seva Project. But that's charity. I didn't feel like I could take it or I could refuse it. So that's charity in the mode of passion. What about charity in the mode of ignorance?
Improper time, improper place.
Wrong time, wrong place, wrong person. Or it's the right time, right place, right person, but it's given disrespectfully. Here's your charity. Sure, you can have it. It's very important. Well, this came again from Jiva Goswami saying that this charity is given at the proper time. So timing is important. When something is done is important. It makes a difference. Just being at the right time can move something between the modes. All right, so now that we've looked at charity, I want to look at this concept of cooperation between the different segments of society. So this verse is talking about a very practical kind of cooperation. That, I mean, brahmanas do have one of their occupations is to give in charity, but basically most brahmanas don't collect that much money themselves. So the ability of brahmanas to give in charity is usually somewhat limited. The main people who are collecting a tremendous amount of money are the kshatriyas and the vaishyas. The kshatriyas through taxes and the vaishyas through selling things, through trade and so forth. So, you know, every once in a while you have very rich brahmanas mentioned in the shastra and tradition, but that's unusual. It's not a common situation. Huh? So although the brahmanas give somewhat in charity, their position is much more to direct the richer sections of society how to use their wealth. The brahmana should be directing the government how do you spend the accumulated tax money. Right? This is one of the biggest questions about any government. You know, right now we're coming up to an election, and one of the biggest things that people are talking about is what are we going to spend our tax money on? Are we going to spend our tax money on Social Security? Are we going to spend our tax money on building a wall at the southern border? Are we going to spend our tax money on the police officers? Are we going to, you know, what are we going to spend it on? How is it going to be distributed? And this is the kind of thing that the brahmana should be directing. And the same with very rich people, you know, people like Buffett and Gates. And what are they going to be spending their money on? I remember one time reading a quote from Bill Gates where he said, I can do much more good for the world on a Sunday by deciding where to spend charity than by going to church. But that's not actually true. He'd do more good for the world if he got advice from brahmanas about how to spend his money. You know, otherwise, it's calculating. The vaishyas and kshatriyas are not really able to understand what's the best good for society. They're just not able to see that picture. It's not within their purview. Like the brahmanas are not in a position to collect huge quantities of wealth. They're not interested in it. Brahmanas are not very interested in huge quantities of wealth. That's how Arjuna was named Dhananjaya. When he needed to collect money for Yudhisthira's sacrifice, Krishna said, there's a whole mound of gold you can find in this particular place. Well, how did the mound of gold get to be there? A bunch of brahmanas had gone to a sacrifice, and at the end of the sacrifice, they were given large quantities of gold. And they said, too much trouble to carry all this home. So they just left it there. You know, they just took a little bit and just left the pile there. And this is the mood of a brahmana. A brahmana's like, it's too much trouble. Why do we want to bother? It's just the mood. It's like, I'm satisfied. You know, Chana Kapandi was once offered a lot of money, and he said, you know, why? I just can sit under this tamarind tree and get tamarind and bake some rice, and I'm happy. Yeah, so generally, it just doesn't happen. But they can direct the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas how to spend their money. So we wanted to look at ways in which there's some similarity between these varnas. Now, both the Brahmanas and the Shudras tend to value simplicity. Actually, it's really funny. I just saw a post on social media by one devotee saying, if you don't want to improve and expand in your life, is that because you're a Brahmana or because you're a Shudra? And I thought, yeah, this person has understood that both the Shudras and the Brahmanas value a simple life for very different reasons. For very different reasons. The Brahmanas value a simple life because their happiness is within. They're in the mode of goodness, and they're just like, they're happy and centered within. Or they're in Krishna consciousness, and they're happy within by wanting to please Krishna. The Shudras want a simple life because they don't want to work very hard. You know, if the remote control isn't at arm's reach, they'll just watch whatever's next on the television. You know, they don't want to make a big endeavor. They're not very ambitious. The Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas always want to expand, 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 expand. 11th Canto Bhagavatam says that they're thirsty, especially the Vaishyas. It doesn't mean physiologically. It means they always want more. So I have a friend who's a Vaishya, and the business in which he had invested in was sold, and he said to me, you know, I could just now retire at 30. He said I could buy a home in an area where the cost of living is low, and from the sale of this business, I don't need to work for the rest of my life. And I said, well, that sounds good. And he says, but I don't want to retire at 30. He said, so I intentionally bought a very expensive house in a fancy neighborhood, and I intentionally got an expensive car to give me impetus to go out and make more money. And then at a certain point, he started his own business. And I said, so how is it working now when you have your own business? He said, well, I can work half the amount of time that I was spending working for somebody else because there's no middleman. And I'm earning twice as much money. And I said, oh, great. Well, now you have time to do other things. And he said, I don't want to do other things. I want to make more money. He said, I want to work full time and make more money. And I was kind of scratching my head. I would never think like that. You know, I would just never think like that. I mean, I have one godbrother who, through a set of unfortunate circumstances, got a large insurance settlement when he was very young. And so he retired. You know, he hasn't worked from a very young age, and he just spends all of his time preaching. So this is a different mentality. And the Kshatriyas also want to expand. So the Vaishyas always want to expand the profit they're making and the services they're providing. And the Vaishyas always want to expand the profit they're making, the services they're providing. The Kshatriyas always want to expand who they're taking care of. So I know one devotee who's of a Kshatriya mentality, and he was taking care of all these unfortunate people in the Dham. You know, rescuing children from the slums in the Dham and giving them medical care and giving them education and giving them clothing and giving them food and just providing for them everything that they needed. And whenever more money would come into his organization, you know, I would have this conflict with him. I was working with him, and I was saying, we've got more money coming in. Let's increase the quality of care for the people we have. He said, no, let's save more people. You know, let's rescue more people and more people and serve more people and more people. So the Kshatriya has this expansion like that. They want to expand their kingdom. If they see another kingdom where the citizens aren't being taken care of, they'll wage war and conquer that kingdom and take care of the citizens. So you have this expansion mood among the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas, and you have the satisfaction mood among the Shudras and the Brahmanas. And if you try to get someone who's a Brahmana or a Shudra to work really, really hard and be ambitious, they just won't do it. You know, they just won't do it. And then the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas just think that they're lazy. Now, the Vaishyas and the Shudras both deal with practical and tangible social benefits. The Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas both focus on higher ideals in society. The Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas both give practical leadership, we talked about expansion, and they have, as talked about in this verse, a distribution of means to meet people's needs. The Brahmanas and the Vaishyas both tend to have a lack of sentimentality. They both tend to be very good at critical thinking. And the Shudras and the Kshatriyas are both serving people directly. Now, in addition to this cooperation, which is the main theme of today's verse, there also, in a proper society, is competition. But competition happens within the varna, not between the varnas. So this concept of critical theory or conflict theory, that there's competition between the classes, does not go on in a sane and stable society at all. So within each class, there's competition. There's competition who can be the best actor. There's competition who can be the best swimmer. There's competition who can be the best potter. You know, like we used to go to the state fair, and there'd be competition, you know, who can grow the biggest pumpkin, who can do the best pottery, who can bake the best cake. There's competition between business, right? That's a real strong tenet of capitalism. And that improves the quality, yes? There's competition between governments. Who has the better government? A parliamentary democracy, a straight democracy, a republic, communistic, socialist. There's competition in the government between the different parties. There's competition among the Brahmanas. There used to be debates among the Brahmanas. I wish in this time we would settle controversies by having proper debates with the proper rules for debates and train people in hermeneutics and naya so we can have proper debates. Occasionally we've done that. Now, competition within the classes keeps the purity of the class and improves the quality of the class. So when you're competing to be the best athlete or the best plumber or have the best business or have the best government or the best political platform, or when you're competing as to who can understand the Shastra, it pushes people to try to do their best and it weeds out the lower level of quality. Then there's also checks and balances because we're conditioned souls. And therefore, we have a tendency to want to exploit, yeah? There is this tendency for this critical or conflict theory to manifest where one class tries to exploit another class. Prabhupada's talking here about the capitalists and the communists. Both of them are focused on exploitation. So also in the proper social system, there's means to try to prevent corruption within a field and exploitation of other fields. And this is done by the checks and the balances, which is why the breeze doesn't try to be, one of the reasons, one of the many reasons why the breeze doesn't try to be the clouds and the earth doesn't try to be the breeze. So an indirect way of checks and balances is participation or non-participation, would we say vote with your feet, where the different classes can decide to participate or not participate. That's one form of control and checks and balances. Another form from the realm of the Brahmanas, from the realm of ideas, they advise government and the Vaishyas, but particularly they advise government. They teach everyone, and they create the standards for everyone in society. So in that way, the Brahmanas have a check and balance on the other classes. For the Kshatriyas, they have a check and balance on the other classes through their laws, their justice system, through their example, and through their speeches and oratory. The Vaishyas have a check and balance on the other classes by how they use their money. They can use their money to set standards of quality and ethics in society. Also, the Vaishyas are the main class that fund artistic expression. They're the main patrons of the arts, and they're the main patrons of public works. In this way, the Vaishyas can promote cooperation and lack of exploitation in society, and the Shudras can promote cooperation, lack of exploitation by their numbers, because they're always in greater numbers. What causes do they support? What causes do they protect? What causes do they not cooperate with? But another way that the Shudras influence and have a check and balance on society is they translate the ideas of the other classes into art forms. They translate the ideas of the Brahmanas, the ideas of the Kshatriyas, the ideas of the Vaishnavas into music, into art, into dance, and into drama. And in this way, they widely disseminate the ideas of the other classes, and they can choose to or not. So whose ideas they choose to disseminate and how they choose to disseminate it has a huge effect upon the value of the society. So we've looked today at the perfect society. Our Krishna consciousness movement is not just about meditating on Rasleela. It certainly is about that. But it's not just about meditating on Rasleela and Krishna throwing, you know, bell fruit balls with the cowherd boys and bathing in the moon. It's not just about that, but it is also about establishing a sane and stable society where there's cooperation between the different classes of society, where there's competition within each class, and where each class acts as checks and balances upon the other. And that way, no matter what class you're in, charity is being distributed equally, hopefully at least in the mode of goodness. And we would like everyone to distribute charity in bhakti. The motivation for distributing charity in bhakti is, am I making Krishna smile? So, questions, comments? Yes, Maharaj.
So, I mean, all this is very nice theory.
Yes.
So, but then we look at how Prabhupada dealt with things. You know, Prabhupada said, the morning I give the class, and the evening I go, afternoon I go to the bank. Prabhupada said, I want more money for pleasing Krishna. Prabhupada had sannyasis, although he didn't want sannyasis on the GBC, ultimately he put sannyasis on the GBCs because they were the best managers.
At that time?
Yeah, so Prabhupada had people doing everything. So,
Prabhupada had people doing everything. I've got 3 minutes.
Yeah, Prabhupada had people, you know, his leaders basically doing everything to do the needful. Prabhupada kept saying that. Do the needful.
Well,
so,
look how small we were. You know, when you have a very, very small society.
We are.
We're not that small anymore. You know, we're talking about a situation we had when Prabhupada put sannyasis on the GBC. We had, what, a few hundred disciples?
Yeah.
Tripitaka alone has 50,000 disciples. We now have hundreds of thousands of members.
Yeah.
We don't need to be in an emergency anymore. We can start being sane and stable. And you see, as the movement went on, Prabhupada more and more started emphasizing Varnashram. If we stay in emergency mode, if the body stays in emergency mode, it's full of stress hormones and becomes ill. If the body of a society stays in emergency mode too long, it also gets full of stress and becomes ill. Can we please grow up now? And stop having everybody do everything. Stop having, you know, the heart try to be the brain and the stomach and everything. And start working according to, start engaging people according to their propensities. At least we can do that. We can start engaging people according to their propensities. Nadagalokananda ki jai.